It is over a year since nuclear talks between Iran and the international community broke down. In that period, Iran has continued to enrich uranium, that is a right it holds as a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. But doubts about the country's intentions have increased, as have concerns about a human rights record. The international community imposed a fourth round of sanctions last June. The Obama administration, Europe, and other countries followed with stiffer unilateral sanctions designed to make it harder for companies and banks to do business with Tehran. Iran and the European Union are now expected to return to nuclear talks next month. Joining me now is Mohammad Javed Larijani. He is the head of Iran's Human Rights Council and the Judiciary. He's an advisor to the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. I am pleased to have Mr. Larijani at this table for the first time. Welcome.
Thank you.
Two things I should say. First of all, you have a PhD in mathematics from the University of California. So you came here in the 70s to go to the university. Yes?
Okay.
I want to make that. You know America. You were here as a student. Secondly, you come from this really remarkable family in Iran. Some have called you your family, the Kennedys of Iran. Tell us about the family first, before we have this serious conversation about issues.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, I'm coming from, I'm a member of a famous family, I should say. This is one instance of a case that the family members are emerging as different political and social positions, rather than to be put in that position from the orders from above. It stems from my father, who was a famous Islamic scholar, well known in Iran and even in Iraq and among other countries.
His name was
Ayatollah Amuli.
Amuli, right.
And perhaps I'm as the older son, I was the first to step into political life after coming back to Iran after revolution. So I started the political life within the foreign ministry, adjacent with academic life.
Right.
And then I moved to the parliament, to the National Security Council. Well, after that, my brother followed suit.
Ali, right now
the Speaker of the Parliament, and he was a Minister of Guidance for some time. Yeah. I was the chief negotiator on the Resolution 598, which brought an end to the war, Iraq-Iran war.
Right.
And Ali was, for a limited time, the chief negotiator on the nuclear dispute, but he moved then to the Parliament. I have another brother who's also an Ayatollah, and he recently became head of judiciary. He's also a well-known scholar.
Sadegh. Yeah.
And interesting thing about him that he's an Islamic scholar. He's very fluent in English language as well. I have another brother who is a famous medical doctor, and he's the head of Tehran University in medical science. I have another brother who's a scientist, a physicist, but he's working as cultural. His last post was a cultural attaché to Canada, but he has academic career. So we are five brothers. Yes.
So when you come together for dinner,
yes,
what is there a great debate among you about the future of Iran, about policy, about a relationship with the rest of the world?
Well, yes. So we gather every week. In my mother house, and then in fact she enjoys that when we talk about serious things. So usually one issue which comes up, we are very much followed in the press, so we are on the spot, so everything we say from one corner and another, it will make some criticism or reaction, something like that. So this will be the beginning of the debate. Yes, we get involved in discussions, mondial issues or local issues. Yeah.
Now, in terms of Iranian context, are you all conservatives?
Well, I am the most conservative element.
Yes, I
element.
Suspected that, yes.
But it is interesting that conservatism with a kind of moderate approach. I'm a pragmatist in the real political life, but yes, I'm considered to be the most conservative one. All of us, we belong to conservative flag with different degrees.
I understand that. The West tries to understand Islam. What is it we don't understand? And where is Iran in Islam? And how is Iranian and Shiite Islam different from Sunni and Saudi Arabia Islam?
Well, from the time of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, there were two big schools, even at his life. Two big schools generated in the conception of Islam. One was called Sunni, the other Shia. The main difference is that in the Shia Islam, we believe that our social life and the political order also should be constructed in view of Islam. Islam is not detached in the theoretical base. For example, just a concrete example, we as a Muslim, always we should have sensitivity about the legitimacy of the government that we are working and living in it. We should not ignore that question. So you see that we believe that Islam has, in the sense that it can generate in any situation, a proper type of polity, social and political order. For example, our system in Iran is a representative democracy. We learned a lot of things from the experience of the West. For example, our system of presidency, we took it from American system.
Yes.
2-4 terms.
Right.
Our parliamentary and separation of power is from the French tradition. Mm-hmm. But we cooked all of them in a hot pot of Islamic rationality, and we created a kind of good which is best suitable right now at this time for us.
Is it a theocracy?
Oh, this is a good question. This is the greatest thing which leads to misconception of our system. Theocracy means the state of church should be supreme to the state, political state. We don't have for church an institution. In Shiite Islam, there is no institution in terms of having rank and file in the church. Church means, in our school of thought, an academic structure which people who knows Islam, not more than that. A state should have its own erection based on the legal thing. For example, in our system of governance, we have three main posts of powers. One is the leadership. The leadership is by itself is an institution, a social political institution, and the leader is elected by a council of nobles, it's called council of experts, and this council of experts of 67 people are elected by the people for 5 years, and each year they elect the leader, and they can detach him from leadership. For example, my brother Ayatollah Sadiq is a member of this council elected by a province. Mm-hmm. Each year they extend the mandate of the leader, look to his way of that he's delivering, and then they will mandate. Then we have the institution of presidency, which is generally all the executive branches under his order, under his auspices. He's elected directly by people. The third one is the parliament, which is directly elected by the people. I was myself for years member of the parliament from Tehran.
Is anybody challenging the leader in Iran?
Oh, definitely, yes. I mean, nobody is immune from challenge. The thing which is sacred in our law, nobody should offend Islam.
Nobody should offend.
Offend Islam.
Right. So it should insult Islam.
Insult Islam.
Yeah.
But this is forbidden by law. It will get harsh punishment.
Yeah. But see, that's part of the problem right there, because you define what it is to assault and offend Islam. And therefore, you can, if there's a lawyer you don't like, you put him in jail and you charge him or her, with offending Islam. Correct?
No, it is not correct. Lawyers, as far as the professional act is considered, as far as they are pursuing the support and defense of their client, nobody will put them in jail for that purpose. Offending Islam is another issue.
Significant number, or it is said, of lawyers who've been put in jail because of they were defending clients who were not popular. One lawyer who was defending a popular, well-known international client fled to Norway.
The lawyer who fled to Norway, in fact, this is a very good example. It was supposed that this lawyer should always commute in the corridors of the court to help Sakina Mohammadi, right, the poor lady which is indicted over there for capital punishment.
Right.
But this guy never spent any moment in the corridor of the court. He's flying from one capital to another to make interviews.
He must have been flying away in fear.
Well, this is what he claims, but even the client never met her, never met him. He never signed anything to support as a lawyer her case in the jail. So this is misusing the title of a lawyer and misusing the oath of the lawyer for his profession. I want to tell you exactly that nobody is in jail because he is a lawyer defending any. If a lawyer is defending one person, definitely that person should be accused of some crime. So defending a person to be popular or not doesn't matter. A lawyer could defend a very notorious criminal person as well. So this is not a bad thing for a lawyer. But offending Islam, being a lawyer, being a peasant, being everybody, it has punishment according to our law.
And offend- how do you define offending?
Well, okay. The offense of Islam is...
talking to the foreign media.
Everybody is talking to foreign media. And this is not the problem. The problem is that when you undermine, you say, for example, this sacred part of Islam is something rotten, forget about it. This is offense of Islam, yeah.
The UN resolution calls for Iran to end stoning.
Well, it is true. I mean, this resolution is asking Iran a lot of unjust, unfair...
Why is it unjust to ask a nation to end stoning? Why is stoning a just punishment?
Well, these are two questions. Suppose there is a law in a country which is considered by other unjust. You cannot condemn that country because they have a law which others consider unjust.
Some people may consider hanging unjust or
whatever. Yeah, that's quite true. Let me make it clear that stoning judges in Iran rarely in 2 or 3 years sometimes give this judgment on a stoning. But adultery in a nation of 70 million obviously cannot be confined to 2 or 3 per couple of years. So obviously, adultery automatically does not get a stoning. But there is another main argument, which I think this is very important to look at the differences. In the eye of the Western media or legal experts, any bodily punishment is unjust. Imprisonment is the most human punishment. This is a presumption in all Western, except in all Western community. The previous head of judiciary, he was a very well-known scholar, Shah Rudi, he raised an argument that this may not be always true. He compared, for example, a man condemned to 10 lashes because of a robbery, or there is a choice, and 6 months in prison. He compared this to 10 lashes will be in confinement of the police. Nobody is aware of that. And after half an hour, he will go home. Perhaps only his wife will be aware of that. Mm. But put him in jail for 6 months, everybody will be aware of the
There'll
case.
There'll be a social ostracism.
Plus, the family will be deprived of this. So he raised this argument that this presumption that... imprisonment is always the best punishment is not warranted.
Okay. Estiani, what's going to happen to her?
See, capital punishment in Iran should go through the first court, the second court, and the high court. And since it is capital punishment, it needs authentication process. It means that the head of judiciary should have the option to revise the whole case. This is number one. Number two, Mrs. Ashtiani, the main crime was killing her husband.
Now, has she admitted that or not?
Oh, yeah. She, well, I'm not going to say that she did it or not. I don't know. This was the judge ruling that.
But has she said that she did, or has she said, has she denied it?
She did not deny it as far as we reviewed the case of her. But
did she admit it?
Well, admitting is only one part. I think the police...
And were they extenuating circumstances if she was involved?
Yeah, I mean, let us leave that to the judge, because I do not want myself to indict the person
But you have said you're trying to... Is your commission, your Human Rights Commission, trying to save her life?
Yes,
and what are you
true.
Doing to try to save her life?
Very good. The capital punishment in Iran... 65% of that is not a public responsibility. It is private responsibility. What it means? It means that when the judge rules that this person should get capital punishment, it is left to the first degree family. If they forgive her or him, then he will be saved. If not, not. So this is a place that we as the Council of Human Rights, we will enter the game. We go to the first degree family. We say, look, your son has been killed by his wife, but there is no reason that you ask for the life of this woman. We try to get their consent. Sometimes we raise fund to give to them. In a lot of good cases, we are successful. If it is done, I hope it will be done soon, then I think her whole life will be saved. But it should, the first thing the family should accept that.
So her life may be saved, but she will not be stoned.
No, she won't be stoned in that case,
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, she won't be stoned in any case, will she?
I don't think so.
Let me go to some of the other issues, because I'm pleased that you're here to talk about
this. Well, one thing I just want to mention, that if you look to Iran through the media coverage in the West, you're losing a lot of sight.
What are we losing?
Well, the reality over there.
What's the reality?
The reality is that Iran is a dynamic society. People may have different ideas on women. On the women issue, there are more than 2,000 NGOs. Women educated, more than 64% of university posts. So this is the reality.
Here's also said to be the reality, too, that you cannot communicate freely in Iran over the internet and through other modern means of technology, that you restrict that, and that this is part of what the human rights indictment against Iran by the United Nations resolution was about.
Well, first of all, this resolution should not be the base of judgment about Iran. This resolution.
The United Nations, it wasn't one country.
Well, we should not be naive. United Nations. It is a place that is in which countries like United States, a number of Western countries, they could use this system for their end. In the same committee that the draft was set over there, strong voices were supporting Iran, very strong voices.
Political freedom. If I came to Iran, could I interview Mr. Mousavi and Mr. Karoubi?
Definitely.
No question.
Why not? No question.
So if I came to Tehran, I could see them, talk to them. They have full
Obviously.
Opportunity to express.
Definitely. I mean, they are always talking to the Western media through a lot of means.
I haven't seen an interview with Mr. Mousavi by the Western media in a while.
Well, there is. Just look to the BBC Persian and other Persian-oriented. They are the Western. The non-Persian language Western media, they are not any more interested in him. Otherwise, they will covering his interviews. And about the internet, I'm the person who brought internet to the country about 18 years ago.
Why do you ban it? What are you frightened of on the internet?
We are not frightened. It is banned by law. For example,
why ban it? That's the idea of a free society.
Well,
Well,
there is no absolute free society in the world. I mean, recently, United States, they passed a law that they can stop the whole internet in the country if it is considered necessary by the president. Just they signed the bill. So they cite the security, we cite the law. For example, pornography, defamation about Islam materials, things like that should be banned. It is against the law.
I can ask you this, and I generally don't have this conversation for different... Do you agree with what President Ahmadinejad says about the Holocaust? you? I mean, if you're a free society, you can speak your mind. Do you agree with everything he says about it?
I spoke my mind freely both in Iran and outside.
And what did you say?
I said, Holocaust issue is a disgrace to humanity, not done to the Jews only, if it is done to everybody. Yeah. We are against that. But to use Holocaust...
We're not talking about using Holocaust, we're talking about the existence of the Holocaust.
Well, no,
the existence of it.
In fact, the problem is not...
And you just said that in fact, those things happened, it was a disgrace to humanity.
If it is done in Gaza, it is a disgrace to humanity. If it is done to Muslim, to Christian, to Jews.
But the Holocaust was of a different dimension.
Well, no, in fact, the dimension of atrocities which is committed...
So let me understand this,
Muslim
because it's important that you say that, because I think you're different. I mean, make sure, and you can help us understand because of the clarity of your English. It is that you're just basically saying you want the Holocaust seen in the context of other acts against humanity. That's all you're saying. I want you to look at it in the context of other acts against humanity. Not that it didn't happen, not that the Jews didn't suffer the Holocaust, but I want you to look at it in the context of other.
No, I want to say that Holocaust is bad, not because it is done to Jews, because it is done to everybody is bad. We should confine that.
And if, in fact, it's done to Jews, it's bad.
Definitely it is
bad. Okay, fair enough. So, therefore, you are different from what the president says.
No, it is not different. I think the president also believes that Holocaust is bad if it is done to Jews. It is against Islam.
And would you accept the fact it was done to Jews? Yes. You know that.
Well, let me be clear on that. I know that because of the general text in history. I'm not an expert. I did not research on that.
You know that because you're an educated man.
Because I read about it, because there is plenty of literature about it. Well, there are literature who raise doubt about that. But
this is another debate. But I mean, you clearly know that, and you know because there is, you don't have to. You came out of science. You were a mathematician.
It is true for that
reason. And you know fact when you see fact, and therefore you know. So why carry this on?
No, we did not see the fact. We read about the fact.
Oh,
so why I try to doubt it? Because killing such a mass order in such a massive order is bad. Why we should be and the fascism in Germany inflicted more than 60 million damage to the life of the people. Why we should be happy of that? So definitely Holocaust is bad. There is no doubt about it. The things that
and there's no doubt that it happened.
You see. I believe that Holocaust happened. Let me tell you personally, very openly. But the degree of my belief on that differs from my degree of the belief I do have on other things. Why I believe on that? Because I read a lot of texts about it. But this is one kind of belief. The main thing that Ahmadinejad was pointing, that Holocaust should not be a pretext to legitimize another Holocaust. This was his main argument. And he started to doubt that if, for example, the Zionist regime in Israel using that so much heavily to legitimize his action, there may be something wrong in the basic one. But this is another argument. From the historical texts, the common one, there are rare texts which doubt on that. Both, all of them are Western. Some Germans, some French, some Americans started to doubt on a lot of things. The extent of it, the number of it, the way it has been. But why we should enter that? Killing people is bad. Let us agree on that.
Fair enough. Yeah. Let me move to another issue about the nuclear issue today. Here is a quote. I'm going to Admiral Blair, who was a former director of National Intelligence, the man who used to be who briefed the president every day and was the person who brought him the CIA intelligence and the NSA intelligence and briefed the president every day, was on this program recently. He's since left that position. Here is what he said about Iran and the nuclear weapon. Here it is.
If I had to have one choice, but I wouldn't bet my national policy on that. I would make a national policy if I were still in government that had the breadth to cover both possibilities, because, as I said, Iran hasn't made up its mind. We don't know who will win in this argument. So we have to be ready either way.
Iran has not made up its mind.
The Supreme Leader has not yet spoken.
Here is the man who was in charge of reporting to the president on American intelligence saying Iran has not made up its mind about whether it wants nuclear weapons, and there are opposing arguments, and that the supreme leader will decide. Is that accurate?
Well, I'm sorry for the president for this bad advice. We made our mind very, very clearly and very rigorously. We do not want armament, nuclear armament. This is definite. We made our mind. We want the most advanced nuclear technology for a lot of peaceful use.
The argument is going, I'm way over here, but if the argument is made that if, in fact, that's all you wanted, you could easily convince the world.
But
you don't try to convince the world of that. Instead, because you think you have the right to do it, you know, even though you're a signatory, you do not try to convince the world because you block efforts to learn more. You've acknowledged concealment.
No, the point is that the United States is saying that we are suspicious of Iran's intention. Fine, they are suspicious of us. We are suspicious of their intention as well. But look,
I mean, it's not the United States, it's the IAEA.
Well,
not the United States.
Well, let us be concrete.
An American does not head the IAEA, as you know.
This is flag led by United States and supported by a number of prominent European members. This is a reality. So they are suspicious of us, fine. How we should handle this suspicion? United States is saying, okay, we are suspicious of you, halt everything, deprive yourself from any access and development of nuclear technology, wait until we get out of suspicion. This is the most naive recommendation request from Iran. What we say, we say, okay, you are suspicious. You are obliged to ask the legal body for more transparency. That's fine. We are ready for absolute transparency. But parallel to that, we should be using all the possibilities of NPT on the buying the fuel for our nuclear plant and buying the equipment and getting technical help. It's not possible that we put in the suspicious chair and people say, okay, wait until we get sure of you. This is the worst argument. This is the case in Iran.
In terms of the acquisition of nuclear technology for peaceful uses, you should be proud of that.
This is exactly why we are proud of that.
But why don't you act as if that's your only objective?
Well, I said the formula is...
And it's not...
Is transparency. No more than that.
But there has not been transparency. That's the point.
Our record on transparency supersede even Europeans.
Europeans? Listen, the sanctions have been voted on by Europeans.
I know, but...
Americans, it's Europeans. Russians.
Transparency.
It's the Chinese.
If transparency is the point, our record is very good. But they don't accept the logic of transparency. Their logic is deprivation.
So,
they say Iran should not have the capability. Even George Bush said that openly. He said this nation should not be having even capability.
So there you go. What you really want is the capability to have nuclear weapons.
Well, no.
That's exactly what you're saying. The capability to have nuclear weapons?
No, not nuclear weapon. You say if we get advancement in nuclear science, the capability is obvious. If we want to go to that wrong, it's like any other capability. You cannot say to the person, you shouldn't buy a knife to cut the cheese because if you get the knife, you may kill a person. So we should cut the cheese by a spoon. This is the wrong logic.
So you want the knife to cut the cheese?
Yes, exactly. Say, let me be frank on that. We don't have trust in United States and Western countries. And they don't have trust in us, as they claim. I believe Obama's intelligence...
Ronald Reagan had a famous saying, which you know. Do you know about it?
What was that?
Trust but verify.
Well, it is good. Let's be on
that. Trust but verify.
Okay. The allegation against us, if they don't have trust, let's go on the way of verification. Why we don't have trust?
Because you don't let them verify.
No, we don't have trust in the West.
But the it's not about the West. It's about what your intentions
trust,
are.
Well, the trust are a two-way story. It's not the one-way story.
All right, let me ask you finally about, go ahead. I'm going to give you a chance to talk because we've gone long here. With respect to Hezbollah, to the state of Israel, the state of Israel, tell me how you see the state of Israel.
Well, I'm a pragmatist. To create a Jewish state and to make it a huge and successful country in the Middle East failed and greatly failed.
It's a successful country. Its economics, well, its economy is prosperous.
Well, this economy,
it's much better than Iranian economy,
well,
as you know.
Well, with the help that it's getting every year from United States and Western countries,
and if in
all
fact
the
you,
banks,
all the kind of help that you could get if in fact you did not have the nuclear issue.
Well, no, if we were different, then we were not Iran. So the point is that the creation of a Jewish state in the Palestine is the source of all tensions in the region. Even the Jews are suffering.
Yeah, but the problem is that you fight this, you, your nation, not you, fights the any effort to find a peaceful solution and create two states.
No, this is wrong.
Why is it wrong? When, I mean, you know who told me that?
Well,
the leader of the Palestinians said that to me in an interview. The one country that opposes us finding.
Well, this is a mistake of Abbas, because his people are opposing that more than that. We are not in a position to decide for Palestinians to have two states or one state. It's up to them, first of all. Secondly, we say that let the Palestinians, Jews, Muslim, and Christian, has a say in the future of their land. To create a enclave of called Jewish state and leave the rest to live in a small cantons, this is not called democracy.
Everybody knows.
So, first of all, it is this.
Are you okay with a two-state solution for the Palestinians?
What
a two-state
okay?
solution. I mean, the state of Israel living side by side with the state of Palestine.
Well,
with agreed on borders, approaching the 67 borders, with a capital, Palestinian capital in
I'll
East Jerusalem.
I'll give you a concrete answer. We honor and we respect any decision that the Palestinians make.
That's the party line in Iran, as you know.
This is
it's the party line. Agreed. We respect any decision the Palestinians make.
Definitely.
But what if you were a nation? What if there was a nation saying, our will is to banish Israel from the face of the earth? Would you condemn that if there was a state that said, in the head of a state that said, we would like to banish Israel from the face of the earth? How would you feel about that?
Well,
and especially how would you feel that if you were an Israeli?
Well, Israel is used to threaten every country in the Middle East.
Just speak to the question of you.
No, I'm coming to that. Israel is the country who threatening Iran and others every day. This number one. Number two, what we are saying that the creation of Jewish state was a great mistake, a great harm, even a great harm to the security of the United States. 9/11, why it happened? It was the debris of that tension over there.
It was not.
Well, this is...
No, 9/11 was not a consequence of the creation of the Jewish state. The people who said that they attacked the United States did not do that because of the Israeli-Palestinian issue. They had a whole series of other reasons they did it. Later in their own ideology adopted some...
Listen, not to dispute
Al-Qaeda
that
at
this
moment. Al-Qaeda was not founded about Israeli-Palestinian issues. It was founded about what was happening within Islam, as you well know.
I will come to that. I do not agree with that assessment. Mm-hmm. But we think in the land of Palestine, Jews, Muslim, and Christian should be treated the same.
Fair enough. And there's an Israeli state and there's a Palestinian state.
It's up to them, but they should be treated.
Okay,
But you see the reality. The reality is that in the present Jewish state, they say that every Muslim should come to the flag and say, well, I have full confidence in this flag, but this is not asked from other citizens. This is a war setup in a country which claims a model of democracy. This is our problem.
Okay, say your problem one more time, because I mean, there are people who, you know, it has now become part of the, I think, demands and conditions of Israel that, you know, that Israel be recognized as a Jewish state. But what's your issue?
Millions of Muslims are living in their home, which is right now under the auspices, under the occupation.
Within
of
the borders of Israel, right.
Was it?
And not even in the occupied part, even within the 67, pre-67
yes.
borders, right.
And they are asking them, come to the flag
right.
and state your oath to the flag. And this is very interesting in a country which is claiming to be the model of democracy. We think Muslims and Jews and Christians should be left okay. free. Why not? They should enjoy to live together.
Right. Okay, but then, and do you feel the same way about people who live in the state of Iran, that they should
exactly.
be allowed to be free to express
yeah,
themselves,
exactly.
to express themselves,
exactly.
to enjoy human rights,
exactly.
and to be able to protest
yes.
their government,
exactly.
and to speak against their government?
Exactly.
All of those things
all
you stand
of those
for.
Things. Yes.
Right.
But not to indulge in violence, to kill policemen, to put fire on the banks, or things like that. Protest is protest, not violence. What we are against is violence. What we are against is terrorist activities. We stand firm on that.
What do you think of Al-Qaeda?
Al-Qaeda is a disease which United States has a role to create that. And the roots of that goes back to the time that the Russians were occupying Afghanistan. Somehow they decided to create Taliban as a counterbalance of yeah. Islamic revolution.
Here is the interesting thing about what you just said, too. I mean, the Taliban is no friend of Iran.
Well, we were in war with Taliban for 2 years, 3 years before 9/11.
Yeah. Exactly. So the Taliban are no friends of Iran, correct? You were at war with them.
They were.
You lost 40,000 people.
They were close friend, close strategic allies of U.S. in the region.
No, it's not. I guess the last question is having to do, what's the status of the relationship today? What's the possibility of the relationship today between the United States and Iran?
Well, it depends on the competence and decision of the government of the United States. Their present line is full hostility toward us, which is a three decades long.
No, policy. That's not true, as you know. I mean, the president has expressed often his
desire. I would
desire.
Be happy if it's not true.
Yeah.
But the reality says that it is true.
Yeah.
But we think the tension between Iran and United States is neither in the benefit of the United States or and the benefit of Iran. This tension should be contained.
Okay.
This tension should be decreased. And we should work on issues at least our interests converging, if not intrinsically, at least accidentally, they are converging together. And we should be practical.
And so what would it take to make that happen?
Well, it needs courage from the President of the United States of America. Our president is very
courageous. How about courage from the Supreme Leader of Iran?
Well, Supreme
Leader... How about courage and the willingness to be open?
We are very much open on that case. Ahmadinejad spoke very openly about good relation with the United States. But response was very bad.
Ahmadinejad, are you happy with his leadership of Iran? You?
Ahmadinejad?
Yes.
Well, Ahmadinejad is doing very well in a lot of cases.
But
in a lot of,
there's a but at the end of this.
Well, you see, we are politicians, so we cannot give carte blanche to anybody, but, you know.
Yeah. We started with talking about our family. It's an interesting family, and it's a great country that you come from.